welcome to the Real Trail Runners of Jersey podcast. This is a show about the running scene here in Jersey, where we talk to people who run, what makes them tick and how they do it. The podcast is hosted by Lee Bennett and myself, Paul Burrows. Welcome to episode 2 of the Real Trail Runners of Jersey. Tonight, I have the delight in welcoming James Manners. Now, James has taken part in many Centurion 100 mile races. He has taken part in the Marathon de Saab, and he also holds the world record for the quickest marathon time dressed as a stormtrooper. Welcome, James. How are you doing?
Yeah, good. Thanks. Cheers, Paul. Thanks, Lee. Thanks for having me.
Nice to see you, James.
What else did I, did I cover anything? Oh, and obviously you've done a load of the local Jersey races as well. So I think you're the reigning champion of every Trail Monkey race at the moment, aren't you? Every sort of everything over half marathon.
Yeah, I think so. Yeah,
Except for Round the Rock, maybe. Yeah.
No, Round the Rock. That's my We'll get into that in a bit.
That's the goal. Yeah. Right. Okay.
I think the only time I've seen you, James, in the flesh, I think was when you were finishing the double top. That was some race because I passed by and I gave Paul a big slap back, but you had disappeared because I come down and you'd finished and gone and whatever you were doing.
Was this the one just gone?
Yeah.
That was it's pretty savage. I love the double top, but it is
great race.
It's a savage race. Yeah,
it's kind of pointless, isn't it? Going out and back, you know. I can imagine people are just like, "What the hell am I doing this for?" Like, it's you know.
It is how long is a piece of string, really? That's what it is, isn't it? You know what you've done, and then you've got to come back and do it again.
Yeah.
But the thing is, it's definitely, I like those out and back races because you obviously, especially with an ultra, it can get quite lonely. You know, the crowd, yeah, it's great at the start, but you know, half a mile in, there's no one around. And people you run with, you know, generally the crowd, you know, the crowd spreads out and it can get quite lonely in a race environment. But the out and back is great because obviously you get to pass everyone at some point. And it's great twofold. It's great for, you know, if you're competing in the race, because then you get to see, you know, how far people are from you, et cetera, et cetera. But you also get to see, you know, friends that, you know, you give them the high five, you cheer them on and whatnot. And I love that because
it is a good part of it, isn't it?
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. There's nothing better than seeing a friendly face, you know, when you're, you know, going through hell.
There's that photo, I think from the first one where you just turned round at Leland and you're going past Dan Gage and you both exchange a high five. And it's just great because Dan's going one way, you're going the other, and it's just a high five. And I just took that photo and it just kind of, well, it summarizes the whole race in a lot of ways, you know, because it's completers and competers, and it is a great event. It's you know, but it's brutal, like, you know.
Yeah, never actually thought about it like that. You know, that normally what I'd be thinking is when I'm coming back, and if anyone's running towards me, I want to look so I'm fit. I'm not pecking. But actually, the way in which you're describing it there, that's a lovely thing because you know, you're basically G'ing on the people that are that are doing it for different reasons. Would that be fair, James, when you see someone like that? Because obviously you're going to be out in front.
No, but absolutely. I mean, you're all there for the same goal. You know, you signed up to that race knowing, you know, kind of knowing what to expect, and you know, you're all suffering. You know, yes, it's relative to how you're suffering, but you're all suffering in the same sense. So it's that camaraderie that the ultra running community kind of have, you know, and it's great to have that mutual respect of just a simple high five when you pass, or, you know, a little nod of respect, and, you know, go on your merry way, you know.
So what other races have you taken part? Now the Centurion ones in particular, which ones of those have you done? Have you done them all, or?
Yeah, did all four of them. So if anyone doesn't know about the Centurion races, they hold four 100 mile events in the UK, and it's done over the course of a year. So you've got the Thames Path, which basically runs from Richmond all the way up to Oxford, and it basically follows the Thames River. Totally flat. I mean, there's I think over 100 miles, there's about 300 foot elevation, which is, you know, next to nothing. You might think that, you know, a flat 100 mile race is actually, you know, that's pretty easy. It's actually I found it's one of the hardest ones I've done, purely for the fact that you obviously running, you know, on a flat course with a 100 miler, you have to walk, you have to stop, you have to force yourself to walk. And when you're doing a mountainous 100 miler, obviously you use the hills as your kind of break, you know, to walk up. But when you're running on a flat course, you tend to forget that you actually do need to stop and walk for a little bit, and it can do you in the latter stages. And the first one the Thames Path was my first ever 100 miler, and my first attempt, I had to DNF at 85 miles, which was really a hard pill to swallow. But unfortunately, sod's law, as it always happens, is you do all this training leading up to it, and you know, a couple of weeks before, you get an injury. Something in my foot kind of popped when I did. It was literally my last big weekend. So I did a double back-to-back marathon. So I did a marathon on a Saturday and a marathon on a Sunday. And the reason you do that is that's the closest you can kind of get to emulating what it would be like, what your body would be like in the latter stages of a 100-mile race. So, you know, you'd never do a 100-mile run in your training. So the best way, or the only closest way you can do it, is to do kind of back-to-back running. Yeah, sod's law. It was on the Sunday. I was halfway around my last 25 mile before I was, you know, cutting, and my foot popped, and I was like, oh, what? And I felt that before. I thought, oh, what's that? And I ran it off, and it kind of subsided. But the next day, I was absolutely in agony, and I went straight down to the physio. And it was basically one of the tendons, the sheath that kind of protects the tendon had basically worn completely. It'd been rubbing against another tendon, and it basically worn completely through to the inside. Massive swelling. And I said to him, I said, this might sound a bit stupid, but I'm running 100 miles in a couple of weeks, you know, what do you reckon? And he just laughed at me and said, you know,
no chance.
Don't be so stupid. Yeah. No. I kind of knew that he was gonna say that. So I literally did nothing for those 2 weeks, and I took a load of cocodamols with me, thinking, right, I'm probably gonna go through the pain cave like no other, you know. And I was at the start line. I didn't know whether I hadn't run since then. I thought, right, I'm just going to completely rest. Got to the start line. I thought, you know, am I going to run 5 miles? Or is it going to be 10 miles? Is it going to be 15 before it starts hurting? I didn't know. I had never a clue. So I set off 5 miles in, fine. 10 miles in, absolutely fine. 15, fine. Absolutely going great guns. And, you know, got to the halfway stage, absolutely fine. And there's one part on the Thames which is a bit of up and down. You've got to climb up a bit of a bank, and it was when I hit that. I think it was the undulation really that kind of got the ankle and the foot kind of working a little bit, and it started aggravating then. And that was 60 miles in. And I thought, oh no! So I was popping cocodamols and all sorts, and it literally got to the point, I think it was 70 miles, and I basically grounded down to a halt. And I was running with a couple of guys as well, and another good friend, Mark Grenier. You would know Mark, Paul, I'm not sure about you, Lee, but he was suffering as well. So we decided to like start walking, you know, walking more than running. And I literally grounded right down to a limp, and I limped from 70 miles to 80. So I basically limped 15 miles. And when I say limping, I'm talking like, you know, if you were just walking down King Street, you would have been whizzing past me. And I limped to 85, and I thought, and I got to the checkpoint, and I just sat there, and I was overdosing on cocodamol, and I was, you know, tripping like anything. and I did the thought of doing limping another 15 miles.
Yeah.
And I just thought, you know what? And it's such a shame because, you know, we're based in Jersey and it costs a lot to, you know, get flights, accommodation and, you know, spend time away from the family and whatnot. And I got there and I was like, oh, you know, it's 15 miles, you know, can I, you know, do it? And I just, and I, my foot was like a balloon and I thought, do you know what, there's some things you've just got to just, you know,
put your hand up
put your hand up and say, no, you know, I'm out of here. And you know what? I was nearly in tears. And I said, I had my hands in my head. And I said to Mark, I said, just leave me. Just go without me. And yeah, it was, that was a hard pill to swallow. So that was my first kind of taste of a 100 miler. I went back and I did it again, completed it. And then I did the other three, which was the next one was the South Downs, which was, I would say, the most beautiful 100-mile course. I mean, I don't know if you've been on the South Downs before, but it's stunning, absolutely stunning. And the North Downs was the next one. Really strange course, the North Downs, a mixture of all sorts. It had a bit of the North Coast in it, quite technical in some places. And just that dragged on forever. That was 104 miles, actually, I think. But that was
Value for money.
Yeah. And then the last one was it's called the Autumn 100, which is a strange one because you are based in a town called Goring, and the start line and the main hub is I think it's some sort of community centre or some sort of parish hall kind of setting. And you start off, and you, if you can imagine, you run out 13 and a half miles. You do a half marathon out, and then you turn around, you come back, and then you run out another way. So you come back, and you run out another way. And you go. So it's like, if you look at the map, it's like a cross, basically.
Yeah.
So you get to see everyone all the time. So you're out and back, back into the center, out and back, back into the center, out and back. And it was great because, you know, you got back to the main hub and there was people suffering, and, you know, it wasn't one of those lonely kind of races again. Like I was saying about the double top, it's great because you get to cross people, yeah, cheering each other on, and everyone's suffering together, you know, it's great. So those four are brilliant. I recommend Centurion races. They do 100-mile races. Yeah, they also do the 50-mile races as well. They're brilliant, absolutely brilliant. I couldn't recommend them enough to anybody who is willing to dip into that kind of distance.
But that conversation with the physio, I think, I don't know, Lee, if you've been there the same, but I can totally empathise with that. You know, being there a couple of weeks before a race, saying, can I run, you know, and kind of please, you know, and it's like,
you know, deep down in the back of your head, you know what the answer is going to be. Yeah.
Particularly when you put so much in, you know, when you put so much training in and you're trying to, you know, we've all been there at times where you're, you know, this becomes a way of life and, you know.
Absolutely, yeah. And like you say, you're invested it. You've invested time, you've invested money, you know, you've invested like holidays, you know, time away, et cetera. And you're so committed to it. And you're asking the physio a question that you know they're going to, you know the answer, but you're hoping that they're going to say, you know what,
go on, you'll be fine. But I think, you know, a lot of the time they've got to sort of do their due, you know, it's due care, isn't it? I mean, I was trying to get a cortisone injection in my knee once for a race, and I knew, you know, it was touch and go, and they were like, and they wouldn't do it, and so I couldn't race, and I was gutted in it, but it was the right thing to do, you know. I mean,
they can't necessarily lead by their emotion, can you? I remember training for 9 months for a multi mountain biking, running, kayaking event, and with a mate, which made it even worse. So the two of us were training together, and I silly went out for a ride on my bike one night, just innocuous, down a set of stairs, straight over the handlebars, landing on my wrist and snapped it.
Oh no!
And I generally remember going to the hospital and looking at
taper
it.
Taper up.
That's not snapped. That's not snapped. he did genuinely. I genuinely said to him, "What if I strap it to the bike?"
Yeah.
I remember saying to him that. But I think, you know, one of the things I was reading up on you, James, is that obviously you know a bit about the human anatomy. Well, you know, so it has that sort of double-edged sword, isn't it? Is that, you'll probably be more hyper alert to the workings of the body when you're out doing stuff, or is that not the case?
Yeah, no, it is. Yeah, and I think a lot of it is down to you know, experience, but also like trial and error. Like I look back when I first started getting into, you know, long distance running, and I look back to some of the training I did, and I was just like, now I'd be like, oh my god, what was I doing? But I didn't have the knowledge then, I didn't have the, you know, the experience then, and I've gone through all sorts of injuries back at the start where I know now that, you know, well, you know, I'm not doing that, or I'm, you know, I've learned from every mistake I've made, basically. Yeah. And that's the only way you can kind of do is you've got to learn the hard way, unfortunately, totally. with those sort of things. You've almost got to put your running ego back in its place. And you know, that's what I always say to any of the runners that I coach. I say, you know, you need to remember that you've got to keep your running ego in check. You might think, oh, now I'm fine, I'll just run it off, but actually call it a day. If you've heard something go, or you feel something that's not right, call it a day. You know, don't be the big man and you know, think you can run it off, because you just basically make things a hell of a lot worse. And I've been there, and you know, it's horrible.
I remember, like, when I first met you, James, I think it was at Round the Rock, and then you went out to the Marathon des Sables, and you came, and we went for a coffee before the Marathon des Sables, which is, I think, when we sort of met properly. And then I sort of see you, and you were doing races sporadically, and you seemed to get injured quite frequently. And I remember, you know, I talked to other people, you know, because we talk about the runners in Jersey, and sort of say, like, your mentality was so strong, but your body seemed to kind of let you down, didn't it? And I guess,
yeah, there's you know, just lack of knowledge, really, from my part. I think I was. Yeah, I didn't. If I was to go back, and kind of, you know, change something, it would be I would concentrate more on strength and conditioning. I didn't do anything like that when I first started running. You know, yeah. I was just run. The more running, the better. You know, and because I didn't have a clue, to be honest. I was just I just love running, and I just, you know, just you know, run, and I basically, and I also as well, I always ran at top speed. I was just, everyone was flat out. I was like, run hard, and I didn't have that knowledge to, you know, have a slow run, have a fast run, you know, but have a slow run, have a long slow run. It was literally, I was like, da-da-da-da-da-da-da, and I basically ran myself into the ground.
Like I was saying,
you learn the hard way.
Yeah.
And it got to a certain point of, you know, having injury setback after injury setback, and I was like, right, something's wrong. You know, I'm keen. Mm-hmm. I'm, you know, I've got that passion, that drive, and that determination, but
yeah,
my body's not keeping up with me. You know what?
Yeah.
And let's just take a, you know, step back and, like, you know, and address the situation here. And it was not doing enough strength work. And now that's like my, you know, one of my top kind of pillars of, you know, of success is you've got to have strength work in your training.
A good base.
Absolutely.
So I can imagine, you know, being injured as well so frequently, it can drag the joy out of running as well, can't it? You know, because you're sort of having to, you know, you're putting a lot in, and then the body's giving up on you, and then you're having to sort of go back to not necessarily square one, but
no.
You know, I think a lot of people might have given up, you know. I mean, I can imagine a lot of people do when they're running. I mean, I think, you know.
It always seems to happen when you're getting somewhere, you know, when you're feeling pretty good and you think, right, I'm on it now and I'm enjoying it, and I, you know, I feel like I'm progressing, and then boom, something happens and it's another setback, and it mentally kicks you in the ass, you know, and you're just like, oh, God.
It's like that sort of either giving up or pushing on. But what it sounds like to you is that you've learned both of them. You've learned sometimes you have to give up, but also sometimes you need to push on. And there's that sort of bit in the middle where you know where that line is. You know where that line is to be able to push quick, run fast, you know, and have that speed and stamina. But at the same time, I think in a nutshell, it's running past someone who's running slower than you and still having your ability to look up and you know, and check in with someone who's coming past. And that's it in a nutshell, isn't it? You know, that you're doing what you can, but you're still aware of yourself and aware of what's going on.
And also with your ego, like you're saying, putting your ego at the door, isn't it? And, you know, I mean, I think like what you experienced in your first race where you had to DNF, I remember my first DNF, and, you know, it's a horrible thing. And it can seem like, you know, that's the most important thing in the world, and it can really knock the wind out of your sails, can it? You know,
yeah.
But it's more important to go and fight another day as well, isn't it? And you know, the fact that you're in such bad nick is, you know, it's the wise thing.
DNFing is horrible, but you need to, again, that's another thing as well. It's learning to listen to your body. You know, if your body's screaming, it's screaming for a reason. And it's finding that, like you say, Lee, it's that fine balance of, is it screaming because it's just sore and tired, or is it screaming because there's something wrong? And it's understanding, you know, when those callings, you know, which one is it and whether you can push on or not. And if you have to DNF, as a bitter pill it is to swallow, sometimes you've just got to put your hand up and say, I give up, you know,
totally.
For the greater good, you know, because, you know, that some, you know, races, they're around it. I mean, obviously at the moment they're, but they're not around it.
Yeah.
Races that, you know, they're, especially in Jersey, you know, if we look, you know, pre-COVID, you know, you could have a run, you could have a running race every month. You know, there's tons of races out there, and it's, you know, it's remembering that they'll always be around, but your body won't always be around, you know, and if you're stupid with it, you're going to pay the consequences, you know.
I think some of the times that I'm talking about mental health, I talk a lot about there's strength and strength. There's also sometimes much more strength and vulnerability, and maybe knowing what it sounds like to me you're looking at there is it's okay. And you, Paul, what you're saying there as well is it's okay to be vulnerable, you know, and when you do DNF that it's for an informed choice, you know, and the more you know yourself, the more it's an informed choice. And
definitely.
So yeah,
and if you can learn from that, then you're only going to be stronger the next time round. Do you know what I mean? I see it as a learning. It's a learning lesson.
And I think also, you know, when you are there and you're sort of mulling over whether you're going to DNF or not, I think, you know, the mental process, you just have to say to yourself, if I do this, I'm not going to second guess myself ever again about this, because, you know, and you're almost like going through a mental checklist, say, I am of sound mind and sound body, DNF, you know, and it's like that sort of thing, isn't it? And saying, right, if I do this, that's it. No moaning, you know, it you know, and like you say, James, it's just then applying what you learn and then ensuring, you know, that you set yourself a higher bar to be able to go on from it.
It's hard, isn't it? For lots of people who maybe, you know, I asked that question, James, about, you know, being experienced with the body and having experience of races and having experience of doing, but it's hard sometimes to be able to be confident initially when you start running, especially when you're running longer distances, to be confident enough to go, I need to stop now. I need to stop.
Yeah. And that's why I say it's trial and error. You know, sometimes you're going to make that decision and it's going to be the wrong one. And sometimes you're going to make the right one. Chances are at the beginning, you're going to make more than wrong than right. But each time you do make that decision, you'll never make that same decision again. You know what I mean? You learn the hard way. And I've always learned that. And I've, you know, learned the hard way a lot of times. And I've never made, sometimes I tell a lie, I've done it probably a few times, but I never make the same mistake, you know, twice.
Yeah.
You think, I'm not doing that again. I'm not going through this again. I know what that is. Yeah. I know what that's going to lead to, et cetera, et cetera. So, you've got to take the positive out of a DNF, that you've made the right call at the right time. Maybe, you know, in hindsight it might have been but you think you just got to ask yourself, was that the right call at the right time?
Don't taunt yourself about it, innit, because it's easy to look back and say, well, I could have carried on, but, you know, at that time you couldn't, because that's why you made that decision, isn't it?
Yeah, exactly.
And I suppose if you're, you're mentioning Steve there, and you know, and yourself, and Paul yourself as well, you've been in that place where you're seeing antelopes dancing in front of you and rainbows in front of your eyes. You know, it's not always the most psychologically settled mind that you're in.
I know, even
more to make that decision. You know, so it's
especially for sure. I mean, it's a bit different when you're doing, I don't know, like an 8, 9, 10, 15-hour race. But when you're going into the realms of, you know, 20, 24, you know, over like a whole day, then your mind, like you say, Paul, you're probably not as sound minded. But again, that it comes with a bit of experience of like listening to your body, but also like being able to keep your mind sound, you know, as best you can. But when you're
not let the negativity creep in as well, isn't it? You know,
no, because your mind is a powerful thing, and you know, I always see it as, you know, your body is an engine. Is a car, you know, you keep it fueled, you keep it watered, and you look after it, it will just go. You know, it's your mind that will tell you that the car's knackered, but in fact, actually, the car's absolutely fine. So it's that mind over matter, isn't it?
So what car are you, James?
I'm a Volvo.
I know what car you are.
I'm a Robin Reliant, I think.
Volkswagen Beetle or something like that, shuntering along.
What are you're an Italian sports car, James, are you?
No, I'm not.
Yes.
No, I'm
just, come on.
We can put that as a headline.
Yeah.
Then.
Yeah. They can't go off-road, can they?
Yeah. Just thinking about that, James, you know, what you know, when you talk about memories and stuff like that, of races, just segueing brilliantly into the questions, Paul. I noticed you seen that. Yeah,
seamless.
What memories do you have, and what are the sort of? I suppose the question is, what's your best memory of any race, and adversely, what's the worst memory?
Yeah. So best. I mean, I love at the moment love doing 100 mile races. I love that. You know, that distance. I think the journey that you go on is just incredible. You know, there's highs and lows. It's a roller coaster. But to the best memory in doing a 100 mile race has got to be the finish line. You know, I'm sorry, but if finishing a 100 mile race isn't, you know, the best memory you've got, then there's something wrong with you. But you know, aside
from me,
I can't tell you how amazing it is when you see that finishing line after, you know, you've been running for, you know, near on 24 hours, you're in a world of pain like no other, but you see that finishing line. And, you know, there's been a few races where I've, you know, put the hammer down for the last 100 meters. You know, it's not a great distance to, yeah, but it's amazing. You know, you've suffered all that time, but as soon as your eyes latch onto that finishing line, you're a different person, and you cross that line, and that sense of achievement, and I don't know, just the emotion that just goes over, because you're, you know, you're mentally tired, you're physically tired, and you're emotionally just, you're all over the place, but the feeling is just awesome. But
you get a shot in the arm, don't you, almost, though? You know, it's like you know, you've been there, you've been, you know, struggling, whatever, and then all of a sudden, you know, it's like, psychologically, it's amazing how the body can just go right, and the mind, and just go right, you know, and knock out a 6 minute mile to get to the end or whatever.
Yeah, because the South Downs and the North Downs, they always finish on like an athletics track, so you've got to do like a whole lap on athletics track.
That's really cruel.
But it's amazing when you get on that track, it is just boom. Well, for me anyway, both times I just hit the hammer and just thought I was doing a 400 meter sprint. I mean, I was probably doing, you know, 10 times as slow as I would have thought I was, but
you're thinking you're running fast, but actually you're shuffling along. Well, we're really giving it some here.
Yeah. But I mean, aside from that, aside from actually finishing, I mean, I'm thinking of the races I've done in the previous years, you know, you get to run some beautiful places that you probably would never be there. You know, chances are you'd never be there if you weren't running it in the first place.
Definitely.
And, you know, like I say, South Downs, absolutely stunning. North Downs, again, in parts was beautiful as well. The recent one I did was the Arc of Attrition, the 100 mile. I did that with a few.
I didn't mention that, did I? Yeah, that's it.
Yeah. I mean, that was pretty. I mean, that was probably the most savage one I've done out of all of them. Just given the time of year and, you know, the environment and whatnot. But again, the Cornwall Coast in the daylight is
because you did that in winter, didn't you? That was it. End of January last year.
It was it was so the year before they had really heavy snow the day before, and it was apparently the underfoot conditions, was everything was rock solid because it was ice and snow and whatnot. This year, or the year we did it, we took the weather forecast and it was just pissing it down for the last, you know, for 2 weeks leading up to it. And luckily, there was just a window, and it rained that morning for about maybe 2 hours, and then it didn't rain at all for the whole time. But well, it was good, but it wasn't good because the track, the underfoot conditions were horrendous. When I say horrendous, they were horrendous. I mean, you were running through bogs that were like near enough, like, you know, mid shin to knee deep. And, you know, you're running that when you're like 40, 50 miles in, you're like, oh, I don't need this in a running race, you know?
Super technical.
Yeah. But I mean, yeah, the Cornish coast, especially in the morning, where is it? St. Ives and around that area, absolutely stunning, you know. And again, places that you would never see.
Yeah.
You know, your chances are you would never be there unless you were running, you know, in that race, you know. So it's getting to see places that you would never see, basically. I mean, it does take your mind off it generally for a split second, and then you realize how sore you feel.
Still suffering.
So, yeah. Tell me, right, about a race that's particularly close to my own heart, which you took part in, the Marathon des Sables. Let's have a little talk about that, because that is just...
Yeah, that's, I mean, yeah.
I love that race.
Yeah, it's brilliant, isn't it? And that's, like I say, when you mentioned before, that's the first time we kind of met, and we, yeah. You know, I tried to get some info off you. It was, yeah, a friend of mine it mentioned it to me the year before and said, oh, there's a race for you. Look, check this out. And I looked at it and I was like, oh, wow, that's amazing. You know, and I'd never done an ultra before or anything like that. I only just got it. Well, I've been into running ever since I was at school, but I kind of like went off it, you know, in my teens, getting into, you know, alcohol and cigarettes and girls, and as you do, you know. And I did a bit of boxing after that, and then I got back into running about when I was about 25, back into like marathon running and etc. But I never actually did that step into the ultra scene. And he showed me this, and he was like, oh, look, da, 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 da. And I remember seeing it previously, I was like, oh wow, that's amazing, you know. And then it kind of like, you know, when someone gives you like almost like sows the seed a little bit, you know, and it kind of was brewing on me for ages, and I thought, oh, do you know what, sod it, I'm gonna go for it. And I just signed up to it, and I thought, right, okay. And that's when I spoke to, I don't know who, someone told me I'll speak to Paul, because he did it, you know, the year before, so that's when we spoke to you. And then yeah, so did the training, did my first, I think Round the Rock was my first ultra, leading up to the...
You came past me on Round the Rock.
That's right, yeah. There was a little bum tap
on the way. Who is this man? Who is this James Manners fella? Yeah. How dare he pass me?
Mind his manners.
Yeah. But yeah, so the Round the Rock was my first kind of taste of doing an ultra. That was leading up to it. And then training went well, no hiccups or anything like that. And yeah,
sorry, it ended up, James, did you do what Paul did? Because I know he ran up and down the sand dunes at St. Lawrence, trying to replicate.
So sand dunes and the beach, I was up and down St. Lawrence Beach, did the sand dunes, did a lot of cliff paths as well. Because another person said, you know, yeah, you might think Sahara Desert is just sand, but actually it's not, you know, it's actually quite rugged and quite rocky and it
I mean, gravelly, you know,
it was hideous, wasn't it? I would say probably that out of the whole course, there's only about 30% soft sand. The rest of it was like rock hard, you know, real sharp, you know, rocks, and my feet got absolutely shredded. But it's a strange one, because you would think, oh, I'm running on sand all the time, but you weren't at all. It was pretty savage.
That's the way it's advertised, and that's the way that, you know, when you watch documentaries, who was the guy that rode across and he'd done the
Cracknell, is it?
Oh, James.
Cracknell, yeah. James, so, Cracknell, you know, yeah. I remember watching Cracknell and other people do it, and it just shows the juni bits where you're running, and then was it not the French dude that got lost or something like that? Then and that was all about, you know, dunes and, you know, dunes, and fine sand. So it's quite interesting to know that it's not like that all the time.
I think, where I saw where, you know, you walk, I was running along a bit and it looked like dunes. And I think I was like, oh, so this is what it looks like on the video. There wasn't many parts where you thought, you know, this is, I mean, it's beautiful. No. It was beautiful.
I think that was called, was it Baduga Dunes or something? There was like basically somewhere that it's just a massive pile of sand, and when I say massive, it's like almost like the size of Jersey, a pile of sand in the middle of nowhere, you know, and you've got to cross it. That was amazing. That was like breathtaking. That was off. Yeah. I think they do the course the opposite way around each year, but
they change around.
The first leg was over these dunes, and you know, you go over the top bit, and then as far as the eye can see, it's just a wave of dunes. You're like, Jesus Christ, this is crazy, you know.
It is stunning.
It is absolutely stunning, and yeah, I had so many, you know, really good memories from that race, because that was really my first kind of taste into proper endurance, you know, endurance world, you know.
So you went out there, didn't you? And you basically smashed it, didn't you? And you finished. Where did you finish, James? Tell us where you finished overall in out of 1,000 odd people.
I finished 27th, I think, in the end.
So let's put this in context, right? Sponsored runners, right? Professional athletes. You finished above them, didn't you? I mean, you know, this was.
Yeah, I mean, I didn't. Yeah, it was to be fair, right? I went in there, and I thought, right, if I can get in the top 100, I'll be happy. And then secretly, you know, I was thinking, if I can get in the top 50, I hope that would be like a massive goal, you know. And after the first, and I thought, right, and this goes back to, you know, you mentioned before, Paul, about getting a cortisone injection in your knee. Well, for me, I had problems with my knee leading up to it. And when I say leading up to it, I'm talking like a week before, you know, and I was panicking like anything, thinking, shit, you know, this is all gonna go to shit, you know. And I went to the GP and I just said, look, give me a cortisone injection and just don't ask any questions, just give me one. And he did whether it helped or not, I don't know, but again, it was one of them. And I got to the start line and I thought, right, how am I going to play this? Because again, my first kind of taste of endurance, I didn't know how to pace. I didn't know, you know, what was best to do, this, that, da, da, da. And I thought, do you know what? I'm just going to do what I do best and just go flat out at the start and just see what happens, you know. And I actually just put the hammer down and I crossed the line at the first, and I was like, said to Leigh, I was like, oh, what position? And she's like, oh, you're 29th. I was like, shit.
Wow.
You know, and I couldn't believe it, you know. And it changed my whole kind of aspect on the whole, on the race. It almost like, whoa, okay, right, things are getting serious now, you know.
Yeah.
And then so the next day I did it, and I was again 29th again, and the third day I was 29th again. So I was like, bloody hell, that's, you know, amazing. And I almost like start putting too much pressure on myself, because I you get the messages from home, you know, they get people to send emails, you know, they're like, oh, you're doing really well, everyone's like, we're
cheering on.
Oh, I'm putting loads of pressure on myself now, you know. And then the big day, which was like the 52 mile stage, again, was a distance that I've never run before. And someone said at the beginning, on the 50 mile stage, there's going to be, you will see a green laser firing up in the sky. And I swear someone said to me, that is where the finishing line is. So I was running along, and we'd been through two checkpoints, and there's five checkpoints altogether, so six being the finishing line. We'd been through two, and then I seen this green laser, and I was like, oh my God, look, there it is. There's the finishing line. And it's like, you know, that was, and you know, you can imagine, you know, I'd been through hell all that day, and it was just getting
cooked alive.
Exactly, yeah. And I seen the green laser, and I was over the moon. And then I was getting, it was getting closer and closer and closer and closer, and I was like,
but did it get closer? Because for me, it seemed like it never got any closer. But yeah, come on, carry on.
It was getting closer and closer and closer, and it dawned on me. I was thinking, hang on a minute, we haven't even been through checkpoint three yet, and it's getting closer and closer to the point where I could see the laser machine, and I was like, this ain't the finishing line. And it was only checkpoint three, and honestly, I just like imploded, like mentally, physically. I started walking. My knee was hurting, and I was like this and that. And I was like, oh my God.
Yeah.
And I kind of walked a lot of the way to checkpoint four.
And that's the last checkpoint four, isn't it? Is it?
No, so there's checkpoint five,
and then finish. Right, okay, yeah.
And then I was like walking, and I was like, oh my god. And then I started thinking, oh, I've undone all the good work I've done. There's people running past me, you know. And I was like, oh my god. Da, da, da. And then I got to the fourth checkpoint, and I thought, right, I need to sort my shit out. I need to mentally, you know, sort my stuff out. And I couldn't eat, you know. You know what? And this is my first experience of like trying to force myself to eat. And I was eating this Cliff Bar, which are the worst things you can try and eat when you're on the run. And I was like taking a chunk, and I was like gagging and almost like washing it down like it was like a giant pill, because I couldn't chew it. I was like, I can't even face chewing it. And I was trying to swallow these big lumps of like Cliff Bar. And I managed to get like half a bar in. I thought, right, that is it. That's and I just almost just like slapped myself silly and said, right, let's get going, let's get running. And I got into a bit of a roll, and I got to the last checkpoint, and I just like flew past. And literally from 5 to 6, I was flat out. Like I'd never been through that journey before of like really being down in the dumps and coming back out. Now I know when you do a long distance like 50-100 miles, you are going to hit, it's a roller coaster. You're going to dip into like the pain cave, but generally the pain cave is short-lived, and you come out the other end and you have a new lease of life. I know that now, but back then I thought my race was done, you know.
Yeah.
And I came out the other end, and I was like a steam train, and I was passing people like there's no tomorrow. And then I seen the finishing line. Well, I seen the camp, and it's all lit up, and it looked like, you know, at night time when you look across the Guernsey and it's like lights in the horizon. And I was like, that is it, you know. And I was like,
Guernsey.
So I was like flat out, and it took me forever. I don't know how far away it was, but it looked close at the time. But it was like, must have been, you know, miles away. And I was like running.
The depth perception in the desert is really weird, though, isn't it? Because you know. Yeah.
And that was my first taste of going through that kind of like roller coaster of emotions.
What a story, man.
So you know that's something you've experienced, that's a roller coaster. And now, you know, you can look back and look at your races and know that you'll probably go into that pain and suffering at some point.
100%. So, you're going to go into that. You're going to go into that pain cave, and it's just being able to ride it out, basically.
So what keeps you going then? Why do you run and race? You know, we were talking, I was very tongue in cheek saying that to Steve last time, you know, that you know, it's suffering and pain, but then you go back. I was trying to compare it to having children. My wife, I hope she doesn't hear this, but why do you go back to have another child? You know, you forget about the pain and then you go back. But what you're actually saying is that almost psychologically prepare for that pain. You know it's going to come along. What motivates you if you've been through all this stuff? What keeps you going?
I guess it's liking the challenge. I like challenging myself and like kind of signing myself up to things that I know are going to be hard. I know I'm going to be finding that, you know, I'm going to be going into that sort of pain cave. But I love running. Like, it's my passion. Like, I can run till the cows come home. Literally, but you know, figuratively speaking, like, I love it. I could run all day, you know, and never get bored of it. I love it. So,
why do you love it so much? Why do you love it so much?
I don't know. It's a strange one. Like, I've always been into running since school. But it's just that sense of freedom, you know, and it's when I have a bit of me time. You know, when I go running, it's just me and maybe my music, and that's it, you know. And I love, I'm really super competitive, as you probably know, but like I love competing with myself. Like it's really weird. So it's a weird thing I've got. Like I'll say to myself, like, you can't run, you know, flat out up that hill. And I'm like, yeah, I can. I just have those little things. And I love doing that to myself, you know, just tormenting myself, really. I have like one kind of sensible James on one shoulder and then this like devil on the other.
You know? So here we are. This is the secret of his success now. This is it. We're getting really into the psyche now.
Either a secret to your success, or me and you need to have a chat after this.
You know Lee's a counsellor, don't you? So maybe I could drop his number off to you.
Interesting. You know, that's really interesting. So what else? Why is it?
I don't know. I was like, again, like I like sports in general. I've always been like a sporty person, watching any sport and playing as much sport as I can. I have been since school, you know, till now. You know, I love, you know, playing all sorts. And again, there's that competitive edge. You know, running, I've been quite successful at it, and I like challenging myself. I like, you know, pushing myself. With running, it's just you. There's no one else helping you. It's literally, you know, you've only got yourself to blame in that sense, you know, in a competitive sense. But it's that feeling after you've been for run, those endorphins you get, you know, that, you know, and the, you know, the I just love, you know, fitness in general, and I love feeling good. And I feel running, you know, when I finish runs, and I feel great, you know, and it's a great for my mental well-being as well as my physical well-being.
And you walk the walk and talk the talk, really, because you've set up your own sort of coaching business now, which you are going into full time. Traction, yep. Running and Traction. Fitness. We'll give that a little plug there. So, you know, how's that going?
Yeah, that's going really well. Yep. So again, coaching is another kind of passion of mine, and that kind of stemmed from my boxing days. So I used to box at amateur level, and then did a bit of coaching with LH Fitness, doing the white collar boxing, and that led on to me taking like boot camps, and I just loved training people, loved beasting people, loved just. Passing on like knowledge and, you know, skill sets and seeing people develop, you know. And
But most importantly, beasting people.
Oh yeah, obviously. Yeah. Strangely, they always came back though. Yeah,
they're a massacre.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, with a smiling face. Yeah, smiling massacres. Yeah,
I'm thinking of comparables here as well. When you're, you know, there's a sort of definite comparison between boxing and beasting, and then going out and suffering. Yeah. I'm kind of getting a measure of you here, James. I'm not entirely sure. I either want to meet you in real life or I don't.
So talking about Jersey, right? Obviously, we're based in Jersey. What would you, what are you thankful for here as a runner based in Jersey? We sort of touched on upon a few things at the start, but.
Yeah, I think we're very lucky in Jersey from a running aspect, because we've pretty much got it all. I think the only thing we don't have is the mountains, which, you know, I can, you know, that's fine with me, because we've got the North Coast, and you can make the mountains if you want to. You know what I mean? You can do hill repeats on the North Coast, and they'll feel like mountains. But you've got everything. You've got the sand dunes. You've got the beaches. You know, you've got lovely trails. You've got, you know, steps, hills. We've got literally everything. And what makes it even more inviting is it's all at our doorstep. You know, it's never more than a 15-minute drive away. You know, you feel for some people who, you know, maybe living in central London, who have to, you know, travel out, you know, hours to get to some national park or whatever, where we're pretty much, you know, we could run from our homes if we really wanted to find a trail and whatnot. So I think, you know, we're very lucky. We've got what we've got, and it, you know, it's literally surrounding us. I'm very grateful and very, you know, thankful for what we've got.
What would you like, talking about Jersey and resources, clubs, facilities, those sorts of things, what would you change, or what would you like to see improved even here?
Yeah, I don't think I'd want to change anything. I think there's a lot being offered, but, you know, for young and old, you know, obviously with Trail Monkeys, you know, you've done tremendously well with providing, you know, races from 5K, you know, all the way up to 100K. You know, you've catered for everybody, and you've given that progression for people who want to kind of move up the endurance ladder, let's say. And then you've got the Tri Club, which is massive. You've got, you know, cycling is a massive thing. There's so many, you know, cycling groups over here. It's ridiculous. You've got mountain biking. There is so much that is being offered over here. I wouldn't change that. I don't think I'd want to change anything. I think there's plenty, you know, that will suit anybody's kind of needs. I think there's
we are lucky. Absolutely. We are lucky. I mean, with the Trail Monkey community and stuff, and, you know, and the Tri Club, and I mean, it was great. I was out running on Sunday, and I saw you know, loads of people coming the other way and everybody's chatting and saying hello. And I think, you know, in these sort of times at the moment, it's even more, it's even better to see people, isn't it? I think, you know, particularly people maybe that you don't haven't seen for a while, you know. It's
yeah, and that's what's great about Jersey. I mean, yeah, people moan that it's really small and it's quite, you know, claustrophobic, but you know, you know, in the running community, you know, you get to know a lot of places, you know, and you bump into them on a run. It's great, you know. You're like, yeah, oh, how's it going? You know, and you know, it's I love it. Yeah,
it's a real big thing for me, that, you know, going out on the trails and, yeah, bumping into people, having a chat and stuff. I think, you know, it's
always someone running on the trail. You know, always. You're going to bump into someone.
It's funny because, you know, we spoke about that, and it's not for me. I don't mind. I mean, I love bumping into people, but I spend a lot of my day talking to people. So it's quite nice for me to get out, and you can still do that. You can still go out, put your headphones on, and off you go. There's no need to join a conversation, but I much prefer a conversation, you know, that's in an environment that we're all enjoying. And it's a great choice to have.
It is, yeah. I mean, I like, you know, most of my runs, I'm always on my own, and it's kind of how I prefer it, to be honest. I like running on by myself and whatnot, but when I do get to run with people or run in a group, it's such a refreshing thing, you know, because you're all there for the same reason. You've got the same kind of passion, and you just chew the fat, and next thing you know, you've covered, like, you know, 3 miles. And you
good enough.
Brilliant. Yeah. It's great. It's really refreshing.
I've changed completely over the last, probably, you know, particularly over the last year. I think I was like you, James. I'd train on my own, and I'd very much, you know, be like that. Now, I think most days of the week, I'm probably meeting people to go running, and it's great because I love it. You know, I'm meeting some guys tomorrow at Queen's Valley for a run, you know, at lunchtime and stuff. And we just go and we chat, and, you know, we're not running particularly fast, but it's just, you know, it's just so good for the soul, isn't it? You know,
it doesn't matter, does it? It doesn't matter what you're doing when it's like that. You're in an environment that's reducing everyone to the basics, aren't you? The simple basic of,
definitely,
well, falling forward.
Yeah, for sure. Yeah. It's great. So we are getting to the end of the hour. So if you could step into my shoes, James, what would you have asked yourself that I didn't?
Probably, like, what wouldn't you do? Or what would you not sign up for?
That's a good question.
So one of the questions we've got is bucket list race. So let's go anti bucket list race then. How far will you go?
I'll go as far as necessary, to be honest. But I think what doesn't float my boat is races that are maybe a bit tedious, let's say. So if we, like, we did a few of my friends over here, we did the Centurion One Up event, which was,
oh yeah,
basically it was over 7 days, and you had to climb the equivalent of Olympus Mons, which is basically the highest mountain in solar system, which is in Mars, which is,
so I think it's like Everest, isn't it?
It's two and a half Everest. Yeah, it's like 70,000 feet. So we had to climb averagely like 10,000 feet a day. Not having any mountains to do it in, we had to do a bit of math, and also holding, you know, still going to work in during the day. So the place where we found the best, the steepest and shortest was Le Platon, going down, up and down Le Platon. And we were getting there like 4:30 in the morning. This was like Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday, Thursday, Friday, Saturday, Sunday, 4:30 in the morning. Well, for Monday to Friday, it's 4:30 till we did about 4 hours in the morning. And it's literally, you're going down, up, down, up, down, up, down, up, down, up. And like literally get to the top, turn around, back down to one, and it was nonstop because we had to hit a certain target every day. Otherwise, if you fall behind, you ain't going to, you know, you're going to be spending all night there. So, and then over the weekend, you know, I spent a solid, I think I did like 15,000 feet in one sitting, just up and down, up and down. It was really tedious. And it's,
I mean, for God's sake, James, why?
It's the challenge, isn't it?
I remember being there like a few weeks after you'd done that, and I was doing some hill training on there because it is good. It's the highest point in Jersey, so you can get good bang for your buck. And I went up and I did like, I don't know, 1,500 feet or something. I did, or 2,000 feet or whatever. And I was up and down 5-6 times. And I remember, you know, chatting to the person I was running with and saying, you know, you've been up there, what, 200 times?
Yeah, it's like I think it was about 230 times or something like that. It was ridiculous.
Mind-boggling.
Way more time up there than we did with our families. You know, there's a few of us, and we literally spent, you know,
who did it? It was you. There was Will Highfield.
Yeah, Evan.
Rick, wasn't it?
Was it Rick? Rick DeLucia.
I used to work with Rick. I know the type of head that he's got. That would have not put him up nor down. That's the type of thing that he would never give up on until his leg fell off. And it sounds like all you did.
You guys were amazing on that.
It was good, but it was. And then someone mentioned, I think Centurion said, oh, next year we might knock it up to 100,000 feet. And I just thought, do you know what? No, I'm not going to do that again. And, you know, for what, you know, I've got, you know, we did that one. And it's an extra bit. But so those sort of races, those tedious ones, I wouldn't do, no. But something, you know, give me like I say, I'd run till the cows come home. I'd love it.
So what's on your bucket list? What's next as far as what is, you know, what's up there as being, you know, something that you really aspire to?
I think UTMB, I've tried to get in numerous times, never really happened. Moab 240, which is in Utah, it's in the Moab Desert, longest trail race in the state, I think, or in the world, I don't know, in the States maybe. It's 240-mile big loop.
Oh, that'd be a good one.
Really would love to do that. Barclay Marathon, I'd love to do that, but I don't know how to bloody enter. It's like a bloody cryptic kind of entry.
That's interesting then. On the Barclay, because the Barclay is a go till you drop, you know, and that's almost, there are parts of that are tedious as hell.
Yeah, but
it's
a weird one. It's not one that I would generally. I like running where it's quite well marked and you don't have to do much thinking, you know. But the Barclay is a different beast altogether. But just for purely for experience, I'd love to just to give it a go, you know.
If you could get in there, wouldn't you? You would just go for it. Like, I mean, it's just one of those.
I've tried to. If anybody out there knows how to get in, let me know because I'm keen. There's tons of races. There's Tour de Gion out there as well. I'd love to do that. You know, I've only kind of got in, you know, only maybe the last kind of 5-6 years really got into, you know, the long stuff. And so
yeah,
I haven't really...
A lot of stuff to do, isn't there? A lot of stuff to look forward to.
So much stuff to do, yeah.
Right, so I've got some quick fire questions for you. Gels or solid food?
They both have their place. Gels, I do more on the short stuff, but solid food, definitely. If you're doing 100 miles, you want solid food down you. Plus, you can take your time and stop and eat, whereas the short kind of stuff, you want to be eating on the go, which gels, you know, they have their place there, definitely.
What are your go-to trail trainers?
I'm Solomon. So Solomon S-Lab are my... kind of if I was doing a S-Lab for most of my trail stuff. I've got the Solomon Speed Cross, which like the really aggressive tread, which I quite like if the terrain's really sketchy.
Yeah, good grip on them.
But yeah, it's sort of Solomon for me. Yeah,
what about your must-have kit item for a race?
Salt tablets. I think I've made the mistake big time, you know, if I'm doing any sort of ultra, I have to have the salt sticks for sure. 100%.
It's an underrated kit item, that, I think. I think it's probably one that, you know, a lot of people wouldn't necessarily sort of include.
Yeah, if you're running, you know, 3-4 hours plus, you need salt, and you ain't going to get that from electrolyte drink or, you know, drinking water. So it's an absolute necessity.
Yeah,
we got there. Okay. So what's your top race day tip?
Make sure you go to the toilet before the run.
What if you can't?
No. It's race day tip is, if you like coffee, make sure you have it really early, because you know what caffeine does. It makes you pee. And the last thing you want is starting a race and then 10 minutes in needing a pee. So is get to the the start line or wherever it is, find where the nearest toilet is and get your business done as late as possible towards the start line so you are
primed and ready to go. Yeah.
Because learning from you know, past experiences, having to do toilet stops and stuff is not the one.
I remember, and as long as there's not the toilet at the start of the race is not train spotting toilet, we're all right.
Oh god!
Or the London Marathon toilets, or any big city marathon or whatever, where the scourge of humanity have been in there before you.
Getting there early to do your business, and then
try and deal with that straight away. So, have you got any unfinished business with any races?
Yeah, I think Round the Rock for me for sure. I've only done it once. I've done it one and a half times. So the first time I did it was when I ran past you, Paul.
It's fine. I'm okay.
No. So that's
really. He didn't even say hello, Lee. Do you know? He didn't even say
really
hello.
You really are a beast. You really are a beast, man. I'm concerned massively.
Didn't even smack the underbum as he went past.
So that was my first. Again, that was my first ultra. I'd never been past like the marathon stage, so for me it was like, oh my god, what's it going to be like when I get into 30 miles, etc. So it was a really good experience that, and I came second, but I was the first male through. So you do the maths on that one. So not just that, but so the next year, I got free entry because I was the first male. So again, I was went into there with an injury. My hamstring attachment was absolutely knackered, and I thought, oh, do you know what? I really shouldn't be doing this, but I was kind of committed because I was like, you know, I've got unfinished business, let's say, and I went into it, and Bruno Francisco at the start, and that was the first time I kind of like met him as well.
You two went head to head, didn't you?
Absolutely, went hammer and tongs.
Battle royale.
Yeah, we did like 6.5 minute miles right to bloody
brilliant
to the pier to St. Catharines, and then. But anyway, when I got into the cliff path, my hamstring started really playing up, and I got to La Fontaine, and I was in bits, and again, hand up. DNF, and that was my first ever DNF, and it was a really bad one. And then ever since then, and that was like 2015, I think, or 14, and I've never done the Round the Rock since. I've always either had something on, I've been on holiday, or done the South Downs or the hundreds. I've always got in the way, so I've never actually done it again. So that is my one race this year that I'm really focusing on, because I want to do. Want to do well in that.
You're going to be taking names.
Yeah, I was going to say, remind me, Paul, to not sign up for that, because I'm just going to be embarrassed. It's as simple as that.
So you're doing that as part of the Trail Monkey Ultra Grand Slam this year, aren't you?
Yep. No, looking forward to those three races. Are just brilliant. You know, for any ultra runner, you know, you ask anyone in Jersey about those three races, and they're brilliant.
We've got the double top. May, Round the Rock in August. Then we've got the CI 100K, which is in November, which is a 100K race at night, basically doing the double top route, going all the way out towards St. Tobin's and then coming back, which we did 2 years ago. Didn't do it last year, and now doing it this year. That's quite a race, isn't it?
That is, that was one race that I completely underestimated. I thought, you know, I was kind of judging my times on what it would be like doing the double top, but then I didn't factor in that it's at night, and you know the concentration and you know your vision, etc. You're basically not going as fast as you are in the day than you are at night, and especially on the way back, you know, if you've been running for whatever 10 hours at night, you know, the concentration it takes, you know, to look, you're constantly looking at a small beam of light on the floor for 10 hours.
And it starts at 10 o'clock, doesn't it? It starts at 10 o'clock at night. So it's,
And I'm in bed at 9 o'clock generally, you know, so like, I think I even like, I tried to have a little nap before I finished work, and then I got home and I thought, right, I'm going to have something to eat, then I'm going to get in bed, and I was in bed like 7 o'clock, and I thought, I've got to try and sleep, try and sleep, and I think I got like 15 minutes or something. But
brilliant.
But yeah, I'm asleep at, you know, 9:30, 9 every night, you know, so starting at 10 for me was like, this is tough.
Yeah, it was quite a night, that.
Yeah.
I think we're probably keeping you up now then, James, aren't you? It's like 9:15.
Yeah.
We're gonna have to tuck you in.
So for our final question then, wave to other runners as you pass them on the avenue, yes or no?
I would wave at people that I know.
Do you blank everyone else?
No. I just, if someone looks at me, I give them the nod. I'm not one of those like, hi guys, high five.
I hug everybody I see.
I don't.
I just speed up for every single person I know.
Do your best running.
Yeah.
No, I acknowledge people that, you know, it's nice to say hello, but yeah. Sometimes a little nod, you know, appreciation, you know, give them the nod. But yeah, generally eye contact, nod, or a bit of a wave if you know them.
Yeah, sounds good to me. Right, I think we're at about that sort of hour mark. Lee, have you got anything else you would wish to?
No, it's just been
add?
Just been great to talk to you. Nice to meet you, and hopefully I can speak to you again. I could probably spend 3 hours talking about the Marathon du Sable with you because of your answers. They just sound fascinating, and it would probably be great to catch up another time.
Absolutely, I could. Yeah, like Paul, you could vouch. You could spend the whole night talking about that event.
Easily.
It's just
I could have quite easily just me and you just gone off and talked war stories about that. You know, I mean, it's just you know, it's phenomenal. I mean, it's Thanks very much tonight, James. And we'll probably get you back on. You know, after you know, maybe you've done Round the Rock and hopefully smashed it.
Yeah, no, I'm keen to chat again for sure.
All right, mate. Thank you very much.
All right,
thanks,
cool.
James.
Cheers, guys.
Cheers.
Nice one.
So that's episode 2 done. Really enjoyed speaking to James and hearing the stories that he had to tell us. If you'd like to get in touch with us to share any stories that we could read out during the podcast, please email me on paul@trailmonkeyjersey.com. You can also message us through the Facebook page, which is Trail Monkey Jersey, or our Instagram page, which is also Trail Monkey Jersey. We'd obviously love anybody to sort of contribute to whatever they feel they would like to the podcast, as this is for you guys to listen to. So next Wednesday will be episode 3, so don't forget to check in and subscribe for that for next Wednesday. Thank you very much.